cards for a big fat nothing burger virus. I can't believe that more people aren't responding and saying, no, I'm done. I'm going back to work.
I think it's getting to that point. We are beginning to see more and more people start to resist the lockdowns. More and more people are starting to just go and open up their businesses. I know people that are saying, "Screw it, I've had enough. We're opening up for business." And that's just a form of civil disobedience. And as you correctly pointed out, they're literally releasing criminals from jails. Some of which are sexual offenders. You know, very dangerous.
Murderers.
Yes, very
They
dangerous
let out
people.
like 22 murderers out of jail the other day. Convicted murderers.
Unbelievable. But at the same time, they're threatening imprisonment of just regular people who are not criminals, who just want to work, who want to live their lives.
And in New Jersey, they're now using drones on the street to fly over to make sure that nobody's out there unnecessarily. I've gotten things, and you probably have too, about these downloaded apps that are automatically downloaded on your phone, these distancing apps that say that send you. I got screenshots from people that have sent them to me that says, you know, you're 10 kilometers away from your house. Why aren't you like so? Why aren't you staying home? Why aren't you quarantining, and being in lockdown, actually being under house arrest? You call this number in the next 15 minutes to explain your whereabouts.
Unbelievable. Wow. We have seen, big tech is partnering with the government to roll these, I mean, this is the surveillance is just mind blowing. It's been growing and growing and growing. 9/11 justified so many things as far as the never ending wars, the police state, the surveillance state. And this is like another 9/11, like a global 9/11, to where now we're ending one paradigm and transitioning into a new system of control, a new digitalized system of control. Now, Dr. Timpany, recently we have seen Dr. Deborah Birx of the White House Coronavirus Task Force openly admitting that they are inflating the death numbers. And we've seen major problems with the testing, including, reported contamination of tests. What are some of the possible factors which would contribute to, for example, a false positive of the test? And what are they actually testing for? Are these PCR tests testing for COVID-19 specifically?
That is the $64,000 question, isn't it? It's probably the 1.2 trillion. It's the $3 trillion question, actually. What the heck are they testing for? And I said that from the very, very, very beginning when they said, well, everybody's got to get tested. What are they testing for? If there are 36 known coronaviruses that have been around for 6 decades, for 60 years, these viruses have been known and been typed. And it's an RNA virus, so each time that it goes through somebody and somebody gets sick, it morphs into a new subtype. What are they testing for? Are they testing for the fact that you had coronavirus influenza-like illness 7 years ago and now you have an antibody to that? Is that what they're finding? Are they specifically looking for the SARS-CoV-2 antibody? Has it been around long enough for anybody to do that? We know there are at least 30 substrains of that virus. I mean, we keep talking about the virus, like there is one, like there's like the virus, right? When we know that from the beginning, the Wuhan virus outbreak, whatever it was different than what was happening in Iran, different than what was happening in Italy, different than New York, different than California. And even the New York Times ran an article, I think last week, that said they know there's at least 30, 30, of subtypes of this family, of this particular virus already. I mean, already they're already talking about it. So what are we testing for? And we're testing superficial swabs, gag people to death with posterior throat swabs. We're doing fecal swabs. We're doing poke the finger antibodies, and we're either getting if you get an IgG antibody, does that mean you're currently sick and you're recovered, or does that mean that you had an IgG antibody from the virus that you had 17 years ago? What does that mean? And if you have an IgM antibody and you are completely asymptomatic, does that mean you're infected and you might be like Typhoid Mary spreading stuff around or something? And they mixed all that data together. They threw it all in a pot. So none of it has any validity. None of it. None of it. And since we don't know what the true denominator is, we have no understanding about incidence and prevalence. And we have no idea. The death rate is absolutely irrelevant. I mean, I think somebody sent me a really interesting document yesterday. It was like a little screenshot. Let me see if I could pull it up here really quick. Of this is directly from the CDC. Here it is. And it says, this was the Provisional death counts from coronavirus from February 1st through April the 11th. The number of deaths that were actually with the actual code, deaths confirmed, not being associated with, but confirmed by having COVID-19, which is the condition, 11,300. This is the whole country, 11,356. Now, how many people died of pneumonia, influenza, and maybe COVID was 54,200. How many deaths from everything else in that time frame from February 1st to April 11th? Almost 569,400. So if you combine the known COVID-19 deaths, 11,300, and the pneumonia, influenza, and maybe COVID with the 54,000, you're ending up with 65,000 deaths from February 1st to April the 11th. 65,000 deaths, which is less than 10% of all known kinds of death. But yet we are shutting down the whole world over this. I mean, it just makes me insane. In fact, I've gotten really angry about the whole thing. It's like I've gone from kind of sitting back, because the first time I sort of sat back and gone, what is this? And I waited a couple of weeks and then I said, oh, I get it. So then I wrote the article that's on Vaxxter, V-A-X-X-T-E-R, which is my newsy website. I've got quite a few websites. Is, you know, same playbook, different virus. So we had SARS, bird flu, swine flu. Now we're doing this with COVID. The difference is that they are at the point of absolute ultimate control. And they've been working on this for 50 years, quite frankly, to get us to this point. And so now it's a whole different ball game, and it really has nothing to do with this virus. And I really, the main take-home message I want your listeners to get is, please stop having all this horrific subliminal message to fear, because every day it's like 5 more people died, 10 more people died. Oh, the death rate is up. But if the denominator is 10 million and you have 5,000, it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant.
Now, yeah, we've known the numbers have been messed with. They've admitted it. And now, according to that CDC document, they're only 11,000 confirmed. And I don't even trust those numbers, to be honest with you.
I don't either, because what's on the death certificate, right? I mean, the Italians actually were the ones that came out when they had all those people dying, and they actually went back and recrunched their numbers, and they said, you know, died caused by COVID-19 or in association with the virus, because you had all these underlying comorbidities. What they found, two people that actually died really from COVID-19, and all the rest of people died from they died from a heart attack or from a stroke or from COPD or from cancer or whatever. And oh, by the way, maybe the virus was there, so we'll just put that on as a maybe. They were the first ones who came forward, the scientists out of Italy, that said, no, this virus is nothing, even though they had a large number of deaths.
Well, I was looking at the CDC website a little while back, and looking at previous years, it was something like almost 6,000 people a day every day in the U.S. Anyways, just from other regular stuff, every day of every year, you know, about 6,000 people die, and they're not shutting down, you know, locking down the entire population. So we have seen Bill Gates, who is not a doctor, of course, everyone loves to point this out because it's very true. Bill Gates has risen to become this self-proclaimed medical and vaccine expert who believes that he has the authority to advise governments and institutions and wants the entire planet on this lockdown for this virus, which appears, like you said, to be a big nothing burger, and until they can vaccinate everyone on the planet.
At least once, maybe twice. This morning in the Gates notes, he was talking about they needed to develop 7.7 billion doses. Oh, but maybe we need over 15 billion if each person has to have, because that's their whole game too. It's like you have to get a vaccine to get primed, and then you get a second vaccine to boost your antibody response. So now we're talking every man, woman, child on the entire planet in order, and that's the only way we can ever go back to normal. In the meantime, this whole lockdown, mask, gloves, drones following us down the street, apps that show up mysteriously on your phone, they're now also giving us this psychological message of this is the new normal.
Right. Now, speaking of the vaccines, we've seen that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is partnering up with companies like Inovio, which is also working with DARPA and the Defense Department, and they've already begun human clinical trials of multiple different experimental DNA and RNA vaccines, which have never before been used to treat humans. And the regulations have been rolled back as they rush to develop these new vaccines without any long-term testing. Now, I personally do not, don't like to label myself, so I'm not going to consider myself anti-vax or anything like that, but I'm sure as hell not going to be lining up to take any of these shots because I believe my immune system is doing just fine without them. And I don't believe I'm alone in saying that at this point, I'm much more concerned about the vaccine rather than the virus at this point. Now, what is your take, as an expert, as a medical doctor, about this new, brand new type of vaccine that they're partnering with the Pentagon with, basically?
Well, what they're actually doing is that they're injecting raw RNA. So there are RNA viruses, like measles is an RNA virus, polio is an RNA virus for which we have vaccines. But those are grown in cultures and the entire whole virus is injected, attenuated, weakened, and put into the vaccine that gets injected. This, they're talking about just taking a snip of the RNA, which then goes into your body. And then your body's reverse transcriptase enzyme starts to replicate and make more and more and more of that virus. So you become your own vaccine factory internally. They tried this a while ago with experimental animals. Because, I mean, when you think about it from the pro-vaccine position, if coronavirus causes all of this morbidity, on a global basis, 40% of illness out there, it's a market share for them. I mean, it would be a good market to be able to come up with a coronavirus because they would call it, look at all the morbidity that we're going to stop, all the illness we're going to stop if we have this vaccine. Sort of like they try to tout the flu shot, right? Well, they tried it. And the problem was this RNA vaccine with injecting it into animals. And they did too, and then they reintroduced, like exposed the animals to the virus, to the coronavirus, and the animals died. The animals got accelerated autoimmunity, and when they some of the animals died, and then they sacrificed some of the animals, and they saw all this autoimmune disease to their liver and their kidneys, this accelerated autoimmune disease on the inside. So they've never been able to do a pure raw RNA, just injected RNA or DNA, because that's the other thing they're trying to do is the DNA vaccines. And then the DNA of this foreign DNA goes into your body and gets incorporated into your DNA by a process called insertional mutagenesis. And so when that goes in, now you've changed the whole DNA process. And if those cells start to replicate abnormally, then by definition, that's a mutagenic change, which is cancer. And so now they're trying to do this with this RNA vaccine, which has never been done before. They think they can do that because they can fast track it. They don't have to grow it in all these different tissues. They can just throw it in and make your body replicate it. They don't have time to do all this stuff because they want to fast track it, which in the United States falls under the PrEP Act. And the PrEP Act is really a nefarious piece of legislation that was passed in 2005. Most people that know about vaccines know about the 1986 Injury Compensation Act, where it gave the vaccine manufacturers complete liability protection, but that's only on vaccines that are on the pediatric schedule, not the adult vaccines. And if you get harmed, you have a mechanism to file for claim through the Injury Compensation Act. And the U.S. government has paid out over $4.2 billion in injury claims, right, on that side. Well, after 9/11, in 2003, they passed this piece of legislation called Project BioShield. And Project BioShield created this indefinite permanent funding source, a trough of money for the pharmaceutical industry. Anytime there was a declared public health emergency or a bioterrorism attack, they could just belly up to the bar and suck out in as much money as they wanted out of Project BioShield. And what was really interesting is that the government then guaranteed to buy their product. And so, I'll give you all the money to create it, and if nobody else wants it, we'll buy it. Wouldn't you like that for your business, Spiro? I'd love that for my business, right? And so because of that, but the pharmaceutical industry was not happy with that. They said, that's not good enough. To have all the money is not good enough. We want to have the same level of protection for these bioterrorism vaccines that are going to be fast-tracked and no clinical trials as what the 1986 Act did. It took them a couple of years, but then finally, it was on December 17th of 2005 at 11:30 p.m. at night, Bill Frist, who was on the Senate, a Republican Bill Frist, Republican Tennessee senator, walked over to the House after everybody in the House had gone home and had signed off on the 2006 defense appropriations bill. He handed the speaker a 40-page bill and said, this will get tacked on the back of this defense appropriations bill, and we'll call it Division E. Nobody read it. Nobody voted on it. It just got shuffled in on the backside of a defense appropriation bill. And what that actually does, I want to actually read this to you because it's that important. And this is probably my main message that I've been trying to get out to people with all these interviews and stuff that I've been doing in the last couple of weeks, is that what the PREP Act does is it goes far beyond what the Injury Compensation Act of 1996 did. And after they got that passed, what the PREP Act actually does is that they get complete immunity for all drugs, all vaccines, all biological products labeled a covered countermeasure, which can also be a technology or a software. If it's actually developed underneath the PREP Act, when the PREP Act goes into is activated, which is the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. It's all biologic. Anything that's called a covered countermeasure that's being created during this public health emergency about COVID-19. It has immunity from all accountability, no matter what they did wrong. If they had a dirty plant facility and it put all these contaminants in it and people got sick, no liability. Complete liability for anything that's declared under this covered countermeasure, and immunity from all lawsuits, all of them. So if you get injured under the Injury Compensation Act, you can file for, you know, in the Federal Court of Claims and Vaccine Court for compensation. Only about 25% of people actually get compensated, but at least you have an opportunity. Under this, you would have to, if a bunch of people got hurt or a bunch of people die from this COVID vaccine, which, by the way, there are 119 currently in development, 10 of which have already been considered as good candidates. But everybody's bellying up to the bar to get that free money, right? And what you would have to do, the families of the injured party, either the injured party or the family of the dead party, would have to go together and take that information to the U.S. Attorney General and prove that the company performed an act of willful misconduct, that they intentionally created this product intentionally to harm you. And if you could prove that, if you could prove it, then you could get compensation for your injury. Oh, except for that little pot of money is currently unfunded. There's no money in it. So Congress would have to retroactively put a bunch of money into the pot to be able to compensate injured parties, which they probably, and that's only if the U.S. Attorney General decided to move forward with enforcement action. There was one lawsuit that came out of this during the swine flu era, so it would have been 2009. They tried to prove it. There was no money in the pot. They said, well, then your only recourse is to go back to the Attorney General and prove willful misconduct. Now, the other thing that this PREP Act does, it allows them to fast track anything. It puts them under all of this liability and puts them under complete protection. They can fast track anything. They don't have to do animal studies. They don't have to do, even when they do small human studies. And let's say they do 1,000 people, but maybe the death rate is 1 in 10,000. They're not going to see the signal until it gets massively put out there. And guess what? We are currently under that act because February the 4th, Alex Azar, our HHS director, declared a public health emergency, and it goes into play on the day that they do it. And on March the 17th, it was registered in the Federal Register. So now it's official, and it will be official indefinitely until President Trump, President whoever, finally decides that we no longer have a global emergency, which looks like it will be when 100% of the population is vaccinated.
Unbelievable.
And this is where Bill Gates gets his idea of how he says that he wants to have all liability protection for the Gates Foundation and for all of these other organizations like DARPA and all the vaccine manufacturers. The idea comes from our law that was passed in 2005. And I'm telling you, other than Googling the PREP Act, there is not much out there that you can find. And I happen to know people that work at the NSA who said they didn't even know about it. They didn't even know about the PREP Act. And they're wanting now to take this like globally.
So this is unbelievable. They have total immunity. They have all of the endless funding they can do whatever they want. There's no checks and balances in place. There's no repercussions. There's no accountability. They're just, it's just the blank check of all blank checks at this point right now. This, we keep hearing about this deadly second wave that's coming, presumably around the flu season or the end of the year, or maybe when this
Right
new.
before the election, man. It'll happen right before the election. I mean, that's when we'll see this, right? Somewhere October-ish, they'll say it's fall, flu season. And now they've created a template that anytime they want to like turn that crank and shake everybody's bell because everybody's so afraid, they can do it. Oh, this is going to be the worst flu season ever, ever, ever. You guys better like go home and put on your mask and gloves, right?
Well, and they say that every flu season, but okay, now speaking of this blank check of immunity and funding and everything, and they're rushing, openly admitting and boasting, they're like proud of the fact that this is the most rushed into development vaccination ever. It's a brand new type of vaccine. It's experimental. It's never been used in humans before. But we see people like Bill Gates, who often champions the polio vaccine and credits immunization with the eradication of polio. Now, back in the 50s and 60s, there was a major problem with the polio vaccine. Could you tell the viewers about that?
Well, that would have been the Qatar incident that you were talking about. So they were kind of fast tracking the polio vaccine at that point in time, too, because it was coming into summer and they felt like every summer they would have these outbreaks of polio. And it's interesting, Spiro, that even today, if you say the word polio to young people your age or even younger than you, and you say polio, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Run. No, the first thing I think of is this the story that you're about to tell us. The SV40 virus is what pops into my head.
Okay, so most people would say paralysis, iron lung, kids with braces, right? So that was in the 1950s. 70 years later, people are still saying that. So we've got this multi-generational indoctrination into the belief system that that the polio viruses actually caused paralysis. When the truth of the matter is, and even the CDC's documents and the World Health Organization say that when you come in contact with a wild polio virus, 97% of people have no symptoms, or they get something that looks like the stomach flu. That's it. 97%. But yet the only thing we think of is iron lung and which is the precursor to today's modern ventilator, right? We think about that. But the two things that sort of happened, one is the SV40, like what you said, and the other is the Qatar incident, that they were fast tracking these vaccines, and a lot of people were saying they were not safe. That like what Salk was doing on a small in the laboratory didn't translate to large vats of viruses, and it just wasn't working, and they weren't able to figure out a way to like attenuate these viruses, and it was going to be a big problem. And so what ended up happening is Qatar, the manufacturer named Qatar and the other one named Wyeth, actually put vaccines out that had live virus in it. And thousands of kids actually contracted paralysis from the vaccine. And it was all happening in the chiropractic literature. They were seeing these kids that were just fine. They were coming in right after the vaccines and they had paralysis. But they covered all that up and they changed the criteria and made the rules be different on diagnosis just so they could hide it. Then the other thing that came up, they found out later, was a researcher by the name of Betty Eddy that worked, it was a high-level researcher at the NIH. What she was doing was she was taking as they were developing, because she was really concerned that they were fast-tracking this vaccine. It was the first vaccine they were ever going to do on this particular virus, and we were going to be injecting this into children. And so she was really concerned about this. So she took some of the serum that they had grown the virus in and started injecting it into experimental mice and rats. And every place that she injected the serum, they all grew tumors, all of them. And she went to her boss at the time, who was the head of the NIH, and said, "We need a moratorium on this. We need to stop this until we figure this out." She got silenced, her lab got shut down, and all of her funding went away, which happens to whistleblowers in that sector almost every single time. And what they found out later, much later, was that that original polio vaccine had simian viruses in it. That was simian virus 40, because there was a whole bunch of them, but one in for sure. And Dr. Michael Carbone actually was the one from Loyola, actually had gotten some original vaccine and had started testing it and said, yes. And these simian viruses, which are totally benign in monkeys, But in humans, they cause slow-growing types of cancers, mesothelioma, sarcomas, solid tumor, brain tumors, things like that. So and he was like saying, listen, government, at the very least, there's nothing we can do to go and vaccinate those people. You need to know about this and set up a fund to take care of them. Well, his lab got shut down and his funding got taken away. Just, and if anybody wants to read the whole story on that, there's a book, it's called The Virus and the Vaccine by Debbie Bookchin and Jim Schumacher. It was published, I think, I'm going to guess around 2011, maybe, maybe a little bit, no, it was before that, maybe 2005. It's maybe been a while. It took them 9 years to do the research to write this book. It's extremely well documented. It reads like a suspense thriller. It's actually a really good book. And the first half of the book is about the development of the polio vaccine. And the second half is Dr. Michael Carbone's story about what he found and what he tried to do and how he got all shut down and everything by the government. And so these stories happen over and over and over again, over again. I mean, anytime you find a problem with a vaccine, you're shut down, negated. You can't even talk about it. I mean, look at how they've scrubbed all the stuff off of Facebook and YouTube and MailChimp and, you know, all of those different things, Pinterest, you know, any sort of things off of that. Because like we said a little bit ago, they don't want the truth about their shoddy, crappy, dirty product that if they didn't have this liability protection would never, ever sell to anybody in the open market, ever. And so it's just it's a horrible product. I mean, I have a really, really good friend he's retired now, but he's still a really close friend who was the president and CEO of a Fortune 200 company. And he said, oh man, Sherry, what I wouldn't give to have complete liability protection for every single one of the products that we make, wouldn't that just be the cat's meow? Because then you don't have to pay for insurance. You don't have to, there's no incentive to make a safer, better product. None. Why? Kills a few people. Who cares? It's cost of doing business, you know?
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a completely upside down backwards system. We know that the medical mafia is a very powerful, group, you know, the lobbies that exist and the amounts of money that line the pockets. This is a real, real big problem, especially now being faced with the potential of mandated vaccines, possibly that there's no liability. There's, like you said, zero incentive to supply a safe product. They're rushing it through. It's never been done before. I was reading that typically it would take 15 to 20 years, possibly.
At least five.
At least 5 years.
Like the shortest, fastest is to market is usually 5 years.
And that contaminated polio vaccine, which you were discussing, that was given to, they estimate, nearly 100 million people, possibly 98 million people. And this is according to the NIH, their own website. So, I mean, this is some real concerning information that people need to be aware of because, you know, I mean, we have been indoctrinated, as you pointed out earlier, that if someone's wearing that white coat, that we're supposed to just blindly accept everything, you know, just take the pills, the medication, the shots, whatever, you know, and not even think twice about it. I definitely appreciate you having the courage to step up and to speak out like you have been for so long. And because it's not safe, you know, for there have been a lot of questionable, you know, things that have happened in the past to people who have tried to stand up and speak out and expose things. And I know you're very busy, Dr. Tempe.
No, there's a couple of things I want to say about
Please.
That. One is vaccines have never been proven to be safe, ever. They've never been tested against a true placebo. When we say safe and effective, the general population of people who hear the word effective equates that to mean it keeps you from getting sick. But I can tell you that being effective just means you get an antibody, a marker of contamination, and you can have very high antibody levels and still get sick. So I want people to know that effective is not a synonym for protection. It's just not. And kids, and a lot of times people that are older, they go, what's the big deal about vaccines? Like my age or older, you know? I don't remember kids getting that many vaccines. That's right. They didn't. Like up through 1985, there were only three. And now, depending on how you count them, children get multiple doses of 17 vaccines and 72 doses of vaccines by the time they graduate from high school, which have never been tested for synergistic toxicity, never been tested for carcinogenicity of whether they've created cancer or not, never been tested to see if they cause mutagenicity, which is transformation of their genes, never been tested for teratogenicity, which means birth defects, and never tested for whether or not any of them can cause infertility somewhere down the road. And now with all of the aluminum, they're now getting upwards to kids, if they get fully vaccinated, around 12,000 micrograms of aluminum that are injected. And all the little boys now that are getting Gardasil, all those, it's 500 micrograms of aluminum in each one of those shots. And we're now seeing that the infertility rates are going up in little boys. The sperm counts are dropping. And Chris Exley, who's one of the biggest researchers of aluminum, like in the world, you know, he did a study that was really important. That they took 62 male volunteers and they all donated a semen sample. And they tested the higher the concentration of aluminum in the semen sample, the lower the number of sperm and the lower the motility rate. And some of them had aluminum that was like so high that they had like zero sperm count. And so we're seeing, you know, this whole global depopulation agenda, I believe, is alive and well. Not only from what, you know, when Bill Gates even said in his TED talk, right, we can only expect vaccines to do so much. So we've got to do it on a bigger level and vaccinate the entire world with an experimental vaccine that's never done before. We have no idea what's going to be coming through that needle. And people are getting, they're going to run to the vaccine because they're being psychologically conditioned that it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And even people, excuse me, that I think are probably pretty staunchly against it. In fact, it was one of the articles I was reading this morning saying that COVID-19 is going to be the upending of the anti-vax movement because people want to get their life back. They want to go back to work. They want to travel. So they're going to say, okay, I'll get just this one. I'm telling people, don't do it. Don't do it.
Well, yes. And I mean, these vaccines that, you know, Bill Gates, DARPA, the Department of Defense, and many, many others are all working on have nanotechnology in them as well. You know, this is wild sci-fi type stuff. The World Health Organization even just came out this last week or so and said that even they don't believe, like, even if you've had the virus and recovered for it, that you would have the antibodies to protect yourself from catching it a second time. And we've seen many cases where people, they say they caught it a second time. So just that alone, to me, as not an expert or a doctor like you, then what good would a vaccine do if you can get it again? Like, I think you kind of already touched on this, but...
Yeah, if you could get it again, because there's all sorts of different strains out there. We don't know if they cross-react. And we don't know how long the antibody will last. And we don't know how long this virus is going to be in circulation before it morphs. So as we're developing, fast-tracking this vaccine to get it out there, the virus is moving over there and becoming something different. Like I said, I started out by saying, Spiro, at the beginning of this, it's like, I can stand very strongly and make very strong statements because I've been looking at this for a long time. And I think it's the biggest scam ever perpetrated on the human race. I mean, that you are going to put your children on the sacrificial table of another human being standing there in a white coat and allow them to skewer your kids, stab them, and inject foreign matter that could kill them in the name of health. I mean, wow.
With a blank check of immunity and funding, yeah, and everything, it's certainly unbelievable and very scary times. I mean, I'm definitely not going to be lining up to get it. I don't care if it is mandatory or not. I'm not taking it. I am not taking it. My immune system is doing just fine without it. I'm not worried about the virus either. You know, I mean, we are being, like you said, conditioned, bombarded with all this fear porn from the authorities and the media. And, you know, I believe, honestly, from what I'm seeing, that this is no accident. This is not coming from some bat soup. It didn't accidentally leak from a lab. In my opinion, this is my own personal opinion, and there is evidence to back this up, not prove it, but to back it up. You know, I think we really need to look at the World Military Games that were held in Wuhan, China, ground zero, apparently, right before, you know, or kind of coinciding with all of this, where thousands of military athletes were all there in Wuhan, China, from 110 different countries around the world. We know that China is big on the UN. This basically, you know, it could be argued that the same people who are really pulling the strings of China are pulling the strings here as well in the U.S. and in many other countries. And this all, everything points to these same players, these same eugenicist players. And I think that there is a much greater agenda attached to this, and they're using this crisis to fast track many, many agendas and goals against humanity ultimately.
Exactly. Total agreement. Totally agree with you.
Any final points you'd like to make, Dr. Tenpenny?
I just really want people to know about the PREP Act. They need to just, go out to Vaxter. I mean, I've done the work for you. I mean, that's all of the work that I've done in terms we created. We have a boot camp course. We have the Tenpenny Research Library that has over 11,000 articles hand-selected on problems associated with vaccines. So there's everything that I say I can back up from only peer-reviewed medical literature. VaccineU, which is vaccinetheletteru.com, is where we have individual courses on these ingredients and on vitamin K and RhoGAM and all that stuff. If you go to Vaxter, and please join up for our email list, while you're there, just join up for our list. And if you feel like it, make a contribution, make a donation at the same time, which keeps my employees paid and keeps them working. But if you go there and you scroll down, there's two articles. One says coronavirus one, and the other one is coronavirus two. Please read those, because that's really kind of a nutshell, summarizes everything that we just spent the time talking about. And there's a little icon at the bottom of each article that you can print it out. And so if you can send the link all over to places to let people know about the PREP Act, how bad it is, and how horrible it's going to be for a long time. And so people have got to like gird themselves with knowledge and information and get their spiritual life in order, because we're heading into some tough times. And I believe that we'll win. I mean, we know what the end of the playbook looks like, but in the meantime, it's going to be a little bit rocky. And I think you should think through like what you already have. I know I'm not taking it, no matter what. And it's like, think through how you're going to respond if this switches from mandatory to compulsory. Like we said, it's mandated and you refuse it. Can they come and force you to take it? I think that people need to really think that through. What are you going to do with your kids, your family, your next door neighbor, now that they got drones flying around looking at us? And they're encouraging people like to, remember that whole thing that they started a while ago, that campaign, if you see something, say something? That was the prelude to what's happening right now. That was the warm up to get that in people's psyche. See something that's not safe, say something. Well, now see something. People are not keeping social distancing, not wearing a mask, rat on your neighbors. The next thing they're going to do is they're going to say, we're going to give you tokens, Bitcoin tokens, for ratting on your neighbor. Oh, or we'll give you a credit at the grocery store when the food shortages start. We'll give you a credit at the grocery store for you to be able to rat on your neighbors. I mean, if people can really take a 30,000-foot view and see where this is going, this is America's last hurrah, man. If we don't all collectively stand up and say not only no, but hell no, and do something with civil disobedience, it doesn't have to be violent, but it can be civil, like when they did what they did in Michigan, all those people showing up there. I mean, really, if we want our country, if we want to maintain our Bill of Rights and our Constitution and get rid of this PREP Act stuff and all of those people up there that are appointed, not even elected officials, this is it. I think we've got 6 months or less to kind of do it.
I couldn't agree with you more. This is such a critical time in for humanity, for people everywhere right now. I mean, look at, they just took the guns away from the public in Canada yesterday, banning 1,500 different types of guns. They just came out and announced, effective immediately, you can no longer buy, sell, transport, use, operate, including AR-15s. I mean, they're moving very quickly. And for people who think that, well, no, they're not going to mandate vaccines, well, look, just a few months ago, you probably would have said, no, they're not going to lock down the entire country. I mean, they are rolling this out. Their foot is on the gas. They have us right where they want us. They've been conditioning us and getting us ready, as you stated, preparing us for this exact moment in time right now. So I hope everyone, like you said, really put some time and effort into this. Have some plans. Talk to your wives, your husbands, your friends.
Your neighbors, the
Yeah,
people around
exactly.
you. Find where your tribe is. Who's your tribe? Who thinks like you? Who thinks like you? If you think like what we're talking about here, and you think like this, you need to find a tribe. Now they've disbanded churches, so people can't get together and pray, can't get together, can't congregate more than 10 people at a time. You really think that has something to do with a freaking virus, people? It has to do with the fact that people can't rise up. They can't get together and talk about civil disobedience, And when they were posting things on Facebook, like on meetups and things like that, where people could talk, they were taking them down. Right away, they don't want us talking to each other. They don't want anybody like trying to decide what we're going to do about this collectively as a community. So where do people congregate? Churches? You have to go in one at a time. They do little clicks to see how many people are going to even end up going into Home Depot. You know, how many people are going into that? You know, you can't go to your hairdresser. I mean, who's always like your therapist. You can't get a haircut. You can't talk to people there. You know, you can't go to the grocery store. They want us in our houses. They don't want us in our houses because they're so terribly afraid of this virus. Trust me, that is not it. It's absolutely not it. It's so that civil disobedience and civil unrest can't happen because people are losing everything, their homes, their cars, their jobs, their businesses, their credit scores, their credit, everything over nothing. And how are, and so keeping us in this social isolation and this lockdown is, in my opinion, is simply so that people cannot rise up and say, I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Dr. Sherry Timpany, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. Very powerful and heartfelt. I mean, I have goosebumps right now just because, I mean, we're on the same page. And you know what? There is a lot of people out there, the majority of people out there, I think, who agree with us, who are on this same page, because we're all put in this same position together. And I'm not talking about, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist, the dreaded conspiracy theorist. These are regular, everyday people. If you look at who is showing up at these protests en masse, these are regular, everyday people. You know, I mean, this is a profound time in humanity. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be here. The legendary Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Sir, anytime, anytime is great. Thank you so much for having me on as your guest. I very much appreciate the opportunity.